When you stand in the middle of a modern city, and just look up at those massive skyscrapers, there is this immense sense of permanence.
Oh, thanks,
You
Anne.
see millions of tons of steel holding up the sky, and you just assume it's this singular, monolithic, invincible material. It looks so solid.
Right. It's really easy to think of steel as just a like a solid block of gray strength. But when you zoom in past what the human eye can see, it's not monolithic at all.
Now it's a whole hidden world.
Exactly. It's a highly complex microscopic landscape. And hidden inside that landscape is a staggeringly common material that honestly almost no one has ever heard of.
It's wild. Like, humanity produces around 50 million tons of this stuff every single year.
50 million tons,
Wow.
just quietly tucked away inside 1.6 billion tons of commercial steel.
So today's deep dive is inspired by a comprehensive scientific review by HKDH Padeshia on this exact hidden material. It's called cementite.
And it is literally the secret ingredient that makes steel hard at ambient temperatures.
But as we'll see today, this isn't just a story about girders and bridges. I mean, this strange little compound of iron and carbon has ties to meteorites crashing into the moon.
Which is fascinating.
Right, and cutting-edge drug delivery inside your own bloodstream, and even the future of green energy.
This specific combination of iron and carbon manages to span planetary science and biomedicine because of its deeply bizarre atomic and magnetic properties.
It really is a material that changes how you view the physical world around you.
Completely. Understanding how it works shifts your entire perspective on modern infrastructure.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we look at how this material could change modern medicine, we need to understand what exactly it is.
And how early scientists even figured out it existed, because it wasn't easy.
Not at all. And the name cementite actually tells you a lot about how it functions. It comes from an early theory by two scientists, Osmond and Wirth.
Right, they were looking at solidified steel under some very early microscopes.
Yeah, and they envisioned the steel almost like a biological cellular tissue, right?
What's fascinating here is that they thought the pure iron was the nucleus of these metallic cells. And this other unidentified iron-carbon compound was the envelope that quite literally cemented the iron together.
So if you like visualize building a brick wall, the pure iron acts as the bricks.
Exactly.
And the cementite is the ultra-strong mortar holding the whole structure in place.
Without that mortar, you basically just have a soft, yielding pile of iron bricks. It would just collapse.
What I found amazing in the history here is how long it took for anyone to actually prove what that mortar was made of.
Oh, it was a huge mystery.
Right, because in the late 1800s, chemists knew steel had carbon in it, but they didn't understand the structural
I
mechanics.
know they didn't.
So in 1878, a researcher named Miller actually tried to isolate it. He dissolved steel in dilute sulfuric acid.
Which is a pretty aggressive approach.
Yeah, and the iron dissolved away, but it left behind this mysterious black residue at the bottom of the beaker.
And when he analyzed it, he found it contained about 6 to 7% carbon by weight.
Right, and he just called it amorphous iron.
Yeah, it wasn't until a few years later, in 1885, that another scientist named Abel published a report confirming what it actually was.
That it was a definite iron carbide.
Exactly. It had a highly specific chemical formula, F3C, meaning three iron atoms for every one carbon atom.
And while metallurgists were calling this F3C cementite, planetary scientists were discovering the exact same compound, like falling from the sky.
Yeah, in mineralogy, this carbide is known as cohenite, named after Emil Cohen, and it's found naturally occurring inside meteorites.
Which leads to this wild theory in the review about the moon.
I love this part.
It's so cool. When carbon-containing meteorites slam into the lunar surface, they don't just leave a crater.
No, the immense kinetic energy of the impact actually vaporizes the carbon into a gas.
This ultra-hot carbonaceous gas.
Right. And then that gas reacts with the raw iron-rich minerals already sitting there in the lunar regolith.
So it chemically reduces the iron and forges cementite right there in the vacuum of space.
Yes. A material we manufacture in massive superheated blast furnaces to build our cities is simultaneously being forged by violent celestial impacts on other worlds.
That is insane to me. It just proves that this compound forms under incredibly intense high-energy
It
conditions.
really does.
But if it requires such extreme conditions to form, that brings up a bizarre quirk about how its atoms are actually arranged.
Right, the stability issue.
Yeah, because we think of steel as the ultimate stable material, but cementite itself isn't actually stable at all. From a physics perspective, it's technically doomed.
Doomed is a good word for it. In thermodynamics, we classify cementite's equilibrium as metastable.
Okay, what does that mean in plain English?
It means if you put iron, graphite, and cementite in mutual contact at ambient pressure, the cementite must eventually give way.
It breaks down.
Over enough time, yes.
Yeah.
It will naturally decompose into a much more thermodynamically stable state, which is basically just a loose mixture of iron and graphite.
Wait, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. We build our tallest skyscrapers and longest suspension bridges out of a material that is thermodynamically destined to fall apart into iron dust and pencil lead.
Destined, yes, but on a timescale that makes it entirely irrelevant to human engineering.
Oh, okay. Phew.
Yeah, don't panic. Think of a heavy boulder sitting in a shallow divot halfway down a really steep mountain.
Okay.
Thermodynamically, gravity demands that the boulder end up at the very bottom of the mountain.
Right.
That's its true permanent stable state.
Right.
But because it's stuck in that little divot, a metastable state, it won't move unless you give it a massive push.
Ah, I see.
The kinetics, or the actual speed at which cementite breaks down at room temperature, is so unimaginably slow that for all practical purposes, your bridge is perfectly safe.
Okay, so we're relying on this temporary atomic arrangement that's just stuck in a divot. Let's zoom in on that arrangement. How do the three iron atoms and one carbon atom lock together to give it so much strength?
Well, the atomic architecture is an orthorhombic unit cell.
Meaning what, exactly?
It essentially forms a complex 3D grid with pleated alternating layers of 12 iron atoms and 4 carbon atoms.
Okay, so it's a pleated grid.
Right. And the carbon atoms are much smaller, so they slip snugly into the interstitial sites, the tiny gaps or folds within those pleats of iron.
Got it.
And researchers like Petch and Cottrell discovered that the bond energy between a carbon atom and an iron atom in this specific structure is actually greater than the bond between two iron atoms.
Wow. So the carbon is literally the super glue here.
Exactly. If the iron grid tries to pull apart under stress, the carbon holds onto the iron tighter than the iron holds onto itself.
Which means the structural integrity relies heavily on maintaining that perfect 3-to-1 ratio, right?
Absolutely. If there's a deficit of carbon, it leaves vacant spaces in the lattice. And that leads to a significant reduction in the material's overall cohesion.
The review mentions that if you subject this material to severe, massive physical deformation, you can actually force the carbon concentration in these tiny cementite particles to drop to just 16%.
Yeah, you physically squeeze the carbon out of its pockets.
But then it recovers back to its normal 25% when you anneal it, which means heating it up to let the microscopic defects heal.
Right, the physical deformation introduces defects into the grid. But because that 3-to-1 structure is its preferred metastable state, its comfortable little divot on the mountain, it naturally pulls the carbon back in once it absorbs enough thermal energy to reorganize.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting. If thermal energy allows the atoms to reorganize, what happens when we blast this rigid grid with extreme heat?
Well, normally we expect metals to undergo thermal expansion when heated. The atoms vibrate faster and push further apart.
Right, like a bridge expanding in the summer.
But scientists tracking the dimensions of the cementite grid found that on one specific axis, what they call the A parameter, the material actually shrinks as it gets hotter.
Shrinks? That makes no sense. It's like putting a cake in the oven and watching it get smaller instead of rising.
It is deeply counterintuitive. It's known as an Invar type effect.
So why does it happen?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you have to look at the relationship between heat and magnetism in this material.
Magnetism?
Yeah. At room temperature, cementite is a metallic ferromagnet. Its spontaneous internal magnetization creates an attractive force that naturally pulls the atoms closer together.
Okay, so the magnetic force is essentially acting like a winch.
That's a great way to look at it.
If you imagine like a group of people holding hands on bungee cords, the heat makes them jump around and try to push apart. That's the thermal expansion.
Right.
But the magnetism is a winch pulling the bungee cords tighter. As long as the winch is engaged, the group gets pulled closer together, even while they're vibrating from the heat.
That perfectly illustrates the competing forces. The magnetic squeezing effect is simply stronger than the thermal expansion. So as you heat it up, it contracts along that axis.
But surely that can't last forever.
It doesn't. Every magnetic material has a threshold called the Curie temperature. When you heat it past that specific point, the thermal energy finally overwhelms the magnetic alignment.
The winch snaps.
Exactly. It loses its ferromagnetism and becomes paramagnetic. meaning it only exhibits magnetism in the presence of an external field.
Which means once you cross that temperature line, the thermal expansion finally wins, and it starts expanding normally again.
Yes. And early scientists actually debated exactly where this temperature threshold was. Guys like Wallenstein, Smith, and Honda.
How did they even test that back then?
They would suspend particles of cementite between magnetic poles and heat them up. When the particles lost their attraction and dropped, they knew they had hit the Curie temperature.
Oh, that's incredibly clever.
Yeah. It generally sits somewhere around 180 to 250 degrees Celsius.
Okay, so if the magnetic attraction is physically squeezing the atoms together, could you just physically crush the material to achieve a similar non-magnetic state without using heat?
You actually can. If you apply an immense pressure of 25 gigapascals at room temperature, the cementite undergoes a dramatic transition.
25 gigapascals? That's absurd.
It is an incredible amount of pressure. And it causes the material to become non-magnetic, accompanied by a sudden 2 to 3% volume contraction. The sheer physical pressure crushes the magnetic state right out of the atomic structure.
Which brings up a very practical logistical problem, right?
Oh, definitely.
If cementite is naturally locked inside solid steel in these microscopic folds, how on earth are scientists extracting it to run these incredibly specific pressure, thermal, and magnetic tests?
It's an incredibly difficult preparation challenge. Because pure bulk cementite is thermodynamically unstable compared to iron and graphite, you can't simply melt the ingredients in a crucible and pour out a solid block of pure cementite.
Because it would just separate out.
Exactly. It won't form a pure block.
So it's literally like trying to extract the eggs out of a baked cake.
It really is. But the review highlighted a brilliant experimental design by Yamamoto to get around this.
Right, the magnetic field trick?
Yeah. They wanted to study the magnetic properties of a single uniform crystal of cementite, but couldn't grow one. So instead, they used electrolysis to chemically dissolve away the pure iron in a piece of steel.
Leaving behind millions of microscopic cementite particles?
Right. Then, they took all those tiny particles, suspended them in a liquid resin, and placed the whole container inside a massive 10 Tesla magnetic field.
A 10 Tesla magnetic field is extraordinarily powerful. For context, a typical hospital MRI machine operates at about 1.5 to 3 Teslas.
So this liquid resin is just sitting in this overwhelming magnetic field for 24 hours.
Wow.
And because cementite has magnetic anisotropy, meaning its microscopic crystals have preferred magnetic directions, all those tiny suspended particles spin around in the liquid until they're perfectly aligned with the field.
And then they just wait for the resin to harden.
Exactly. When it's set, they had a composite block that perfectly mimicked the physical and magnetic properties of a single giant cementite crystal.
That is a highly elegant solution for studying its properties. Yeah. But if industries want to synthesize larger bulk amounts of pure cementite for actual applications, they can't rely on resin and MRI machines.
No, they have to rely on brute force. One method used by researchers like Yamamoto is mechanical alloying.
Which is just grinding it up.
Essentially, they take raw powders of iron and graphite in the exact 3-to-1 ratio and mill them together for extended periods. The physical impact mechanically forces the atoms to mix into a solid solution.
And then they bake it.
They use spark plasma sintering. They place the powder under a vacuum at over 1173 Kelvin and pass electrical currents through it to rapidly fuse it.
But the review notes that this process doesn't always jump straight to cementite, does it? It's a bit of a chaotic journey.
Yeah, the atomic structure evolves as energy is added. When you mill the powders, you first form transition carbides.
Like temporary structures.
Right, things like Hague or epsilon carbide. These have different ratios. But eventually, with enough thermal and electrical energy, the atoms reorganize and settle into the final Fe3C cementite structure.
Okay, so learning how to synthesize this material at scale isn't just a lab exercise. It has massive implications for the environment.
Huge implications.
Because the global steel industry is notoriously one of the largest generators of carbon dioxide emissions on the planet. But the review outlines a process where we can manufacture cementite by taking magnetite, which is an iron oxide ore, and exposing it to carbon monoxide gas at high temperatures.
Yes, this carburizing process could theoretically be integrated into electrical arc furnaces.
That's amazing.
It is. By using this method, you produce the iron structures you need while simultaneously reducing carbon dioxide emissions. It fundamentally shifts cementite from being just a structural byproduct into a deliberate tool for green steel production.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Why should you care about synthesizing nanoparticles of cementite?
Well, because it's actively being engineered as a high-tech material for the future, especially in biomedicine.
Right. Think of them as tiny, microscopic delivery trucks. Researchers are exploring how to use cementite nanoparticles as highly targeted delivery vehicles for medicine.
Because delivering highly toxic drugs, like chemotherapy, exactly to a tumor without poisoning the healthy surrounding tissue is one of the hardest problems in medicine today.
So how do they make these tiny trucks?
Researchers can prepare nanoparticles of cementite by the thermal decomposition of a chemical called iron pentacarbonyl.
Okay.
And because these tiny cementite particles retain their ferromagnetism, doctors could theoretically coat them in a therapeutic drug, inject them into your bloodstream, and then use precise external magnetic fields to physically steer the medicine directly to the tumor.
I mean, I assumed pure elemental iron would be the obvious choice for magnetic steering in the body, since we already have iron in our blood. Why go through the trouble of synthesizing cementite?
That's a great question. Pure elemental iron has a fatal flaw when introduced as a delivery vehicle inside the human body. It oxidizes or rusts extremely quickly.
Oh, of course.
Once those pure iron particles begin to rust in the bloodstream, they lose their magnetic properties. They stop responding to the doctor's magnetic steering.
And I imagine rust in your veins isn't great for you.
Definitely not. The oxidation process can cause unwanted toxic side effects. But cementite, because of how tightly that carbon superglue holds a lattice together, is significantly more resistant to oxidation and corrosion.
So it survives the harsh environment of the bloodstream while remaining magnetic enough to be manipulated.
Exactly.
That's incredible. From the mortar in a skyscraper to a rust-proof magnetic delivery vehicle swimming through your veins.
And it doesn't stop there. It's also making waves in the green energy sector.
Right, because you can actually engineer cementite to be highly porous.
Yes. The review details a synthesis method where researchers create a massive surface area. They use a chemical called desanoimidazole and a silica template.
Okay, a template.
They heat the mixture to 700 degrees Celsius, which fuses the cementite around the silica. Then they use a chemical wash to completely dissolve the silica away.
By washing away that silica template, they are left with a microscopic skeleton, like a highly porous cementite sponge.
And the pores are only about 20 nanometers wide, which gives the material an absolutely massive amount of internal surface area.
And surface area is everything in chemistry. Scientists are using this porous cementite sponge as a highly stable catalyst to break down ammonia into hydrogen and nitrogen gases.
Which is a potential game changer for the green hydrogen economy.
Because hydrogen is an incredibly light, zero-emission fuel, but it's notoriously difficult and expensive to transport, right? Mm. It requires heavy, high-pressure tanks or cryogenic freezing.
Right. Ammonia, however, is mostly just hydrogen and nitrogen.
Mm.
And we already safely ship millions of gallons of liquid ammonia worldwide for fertilizer.
The logistical challenge has always been how to efficiently extract the hydrogen back out of the ammonia once it reaches its destination.
Exactly. But by passing the liquid ammonia through this porous cementite catalyst, you can crack it back into usable hydrogen gas right where you need it.
Couldn't regular iron do that?
Metallic iron powders could theoretically perform this catalytic reaction as well, yes. But fine metallic iron powders are highly reactive and carry a severe risk of sudden explosion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Cementite is vastly more stable under harsh chemical conditions, making it much safer for large-scale industrial catalytic reactions.
If we look back at the journey we've mapped out today, it completely changes the texture of the modern world.
It really does.
We started with a mysterious black sludge at the bottom of a 19th century acid beaker. We discovered it's the invisible microscopic mortar holding up every suspension bridge and skyscraper on Earth.
We tracked its origins to the dust on the moon forged by violent meteorite impacts.
And now, scientists are custom baking it in magnetic fields to serve as targeted drug delivery vehicles and explosion-proof catalysts for green energy. It is easily one of the most important hidden materials we interact with every day.
It is a truly remarkable compound. And you know, the review leaves us with a philosophical twist pulled directly from its deepest thermodynamic properties.
The metastability thing.
Right. We established earlier that all cementite is technically metastable. It's trapped in a shallow energy divot, destined to eventually break down into raw iron and graphite over a long enough timeline.
Yeah, the boulder on the mountain.
But the author points out a much larger truth about physics. In the grandest sense, all equilibria are metastable.
Wait,
all equilibria, as in everything.
Everything, even the fundamental constituent atoms of the world around us, the iron, the carbon, the screen you're looking at right now, will all eventually decay if the universe simply keeps expanding over a long enough cosmic timeline.
Wow.
Nothing is in a state of permanent, infinite equilibrium, which forces you to ponder something pretty profound. If nothing in the universe is truly permanent, and even the hardest, most unyielding microscopic components of the steel holding up our cities are just slowly ticking clocks on a geological scale.
Is all of human engineering simply the art of mastering metastability?
Exactly. Are we just learning how to intricately manipulate atoms so they hold their shape just long enough for us to use them?
That casts a completely different light on the skyline next time you look at a skyscraper. It's all just a temporary, highly orchestrated arrangement of atoms designed to resist collapse for exactly as long as we need it to. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.